Arjuna's question is, how to know the man of wisdom? The enlightened master, how can we recognize such a person? How does he walk, talk, move about? How does he deal with people? And when somebody asked Bhagwan Raman Maharishi that question, he said, to know a man of wisdom, you have to be one yourself. I have to be a man of wisdom or a woman before I know one? Yes. Because for all external appearances, as Swamiji told us this week, Swami Ishwarananji, the man of wisdom appears like us. He still gets up in the morning and brushes his teeth and takes a shower and has breakfast, does what he's supposed to do, and then has his lunch and has dinner and goes to sleep. Well, I do the same and he does the same. What is the difference? In fact, when Swami Chinmayanandaji came back from Uttarkashi, having spent time with his master and was wearing orange clothes and preaching and teaching, and one time he was taking a shower and people were like, does he take a shower too? Yes. Man of wisdom does everything that you and I do. But the difference is the attitude. Difference is how they look at the world. That is the only difference. So, the world remains the same for him and for us. But we look at the world through our little egocentric personality. He looks at the totality. And that is the only difference. The difference is in the vision. Difference is not, it's not that Swamiji said he won't grow horns on his head, or he won't have a halo. You know, a lot of times they show these masters, and so we're looking around, let me find somebody with a halo. There is no halo. It's just how they look at the world. In fact, there's a very beautiful instance in Raman Maharishi's life, how these men of wisdom deal with the world. So our Pujya Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda was a teenager. He had just finished college. I just finished high school and was just before going to college, was traveling in the train. He bought a rail pass and he was traveling through South India. And he reached Tiruvannamalai where Raman Maharishi was. And he had never heard of Raman Maharishi. But somehow he felt that I have to go to this place. And so he goes there and he's a teenager boy. In fact, even though he grew up in a very religious home, he had, as sometimes happens, you know, there were so many pujas done in his house, he had become an atheist. He didn't believe in God, he didn't believe in rituals, he said. And he was, you know, like confused. Even though outwardly he was an atheist, but inside him there was some sense of depression, like there is something lacking in my life. It was a very interesting state in his life. And so he goes to Tiruvannamalai, he gets down from the train, walks in the hot summer of, you know, Tamil Nadu, very hot in July, extremely hot, and he walks and he reaches this hut. And he walks in there, and of course Raman Maharishi was sitting on the stage, but it was because it was so sunny outside, for a while he can't see anything because it's so dark in there, you know, in the, so he slowly walks. And then he sees the back of the people and there was no space. So he went to the front of the crowd and sit there. And on the stage was Raman Maharishi just wearing a loincloth with his eyes closed. And so Swami Chinmayanandaji just sat there and looked at him. And the moment he looked at him, Raman Maharishi opened his eyes. And so in his own Swami Chinmayanandaji's words, he says, it was like he penetrated deep through me to my soul. His eyes were so compassionate, but penetrating. It like he went through and through me. And I didn't know what was happening to me. And then he closed his eyes. And then after a while, Gurudev left and he was telling himself, nothing happened to me. That man is just an hypnotist. He just mesmerized me. But he said that young boy who walked in and the young boy who walked out were too different. I was changed. And that's when his spiritual search started. And then many years later, after he became a journalist and all that, and when he went to his guru, Swami Tapovan Maharaj, he says it in his writings, he says, what experience I had with my guru after years of study and meditation, that same experience I had just in an instant. in the presence of that master. So that is the difference between them. And also the commentator says that there were hundreds and thousands of people who used to walk by, you know, Raman Maharishiji when he was meditating, or would come and sit, or sometimes he would be just sitting, not even meditating. He was just sitting and people would come and walk by, and most of the time he did. But did all of them get affected like that? We don't know how many of them had this profound an experience that Gurudev. See, Gurudev must have been ready. See, his mind was ready, his intellect was ready. All he needed was that spark. And so that's what the man of wisdom. Similar story is about his guru, Tapovan Maharaj. One time Tapovan Maharaj went to meet Gurudev also, Pujya Gurudev. That time he was younger. Tapovan Maharaj went to meet Raman Maharishiji. And Tapovan Maharaj, of course, was younger, and Raman Maharishi was a little older. So Tapovan Maharaj went prostrated to him and sat down, and they both looked at each other. And for 1 hour, there was no conversation. So Tapovan Maharaj afterwards says there was a deep silence there in that room. There was one, and people were looking from outside. What will these two great masters talk? You know, words of wisdom we will get. And nothing. There was a profound silence. And then Tapovan Maharaj and Raman Maharishi got up to have lunch. Tapovan Maharaj just left. Somebody told him, stay for prasad. He said no. Because he was in that blissful state. So to be a realized master, we have to become one. To know a realized master, I have to become one. But these words that Krishna has told us, these verses from 55 to 71, these 17 verses are a very, very beautiful description of Sthita Prajna. And all great masters who have studied Gita or have taught Gita all say this is their favorite. Why? Because even though you cannot describe a man of wisdom, these are indicators. Just as you cannot describe Brahman, that totality, but the Upanishads are indicators which point. So similarly, these words point to us about that man of wisdom. And just to briefly summarize some of the points that we have studied about the man of wisdom is, he starts with Prajahati. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan parth manogatan atman yev atmanatushtah sthita prajnasya tadochate. He says, one who has given up all desires, prajahati yada kaman, that arise from the mind, and that can only happen when atmanev atmanatushtah, when I am content with myself, when I am happy with myself. A mind which is centered in the Lord only can be free of the world. Otherwise, the world has its very powerful hold upon us. And the objects of the world, the emotions, the thoughts have a hold upon us, and we are caught in that. So the way is to turn towards the Lord within. And then also another place in the same, he says, yatha kurm, yatha samharate chayam kurmonga niva sarvasha indriyani indriyarthe bhyah tasya prajna pratishthita. So man of wisdom, senses, impulses come to him also. He sees the same thing, hears, smells, tastes and touch. But you and I, we get caught. And he does not, because he has the ability to withdraw his senses. And for us, he says, we are like the Vayur Navivam Ambasi. Just as a boat that has no captain and has no strength, power easily gets deviated. So our intellect gets moved by our mind and our senses. So that's why they say, keep your senses under control. And then he also said, Dukheshu Anudvigna Mana Sukheshu Vigat Sprehaha Vita Raga Bhaya Krodaha Sthitadir Muni Ruchate. So man of wisdom, either joys or sorrows come, the person is, joys come to him also and sorrows come to him also. But his mind does not get disturbed excessively when sorrows come, and he does not become overjoyed. You know, like us, we, a little thing happens, we get very happy. And then something bad happens. Oh, why God is doing this to me, my neighbor. So we all start crying, but the man of wisdom is established in this. So chapter, the verse number 70. Now, this verse is very important. That's why Bhagwan has changed the meter. See, whenever the meter changes, that means that verse is very, very powerful. So, we'll do chant in a different meter. Apuryamanam achala pratishtham. Samudramapav pravishanti yadvat. Tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve. Sa shanti mapnoti na kama kami. Very, very, this is one of the probably the few best verses in the Bhagavad Gita, and very important. This is something we should understand, memorize. Actually, all these from 55 to 71, we should all attempt to memorize them. Or if not memorize, at least know the meaning of the Sanskrit and read the commentary again, because then it gives us a yardstick. Okay, that's how I should be and where am I? So all of these verses, I would suggest that you try to memorize. The more you memorize the Sanskrit verses, the more they go deep into your understanding. So memorize them with understanding. That's how I try to memorize these verses, with understanding. And then alone, this knowledge becomes deep, becomes pakka. So apuryamanam. Apuryamanam means full from all sides, completely full. Puryamanam. Achala pratishtham. Achala means immoving, unmoving. Pratishtham means stable. So, stable, established, and full from all sides. Who is that? That is the ocean, samudram. So, an ocean is full and it is stable. It does not deviate. It does not move out. The ocean pretty much does not cross its boundaries. The river can easily do that. River can get small or big, but the ocean pretty much remains unchanged. Samudram, in the ocean, apah pravishanti yadvata, just as in the ocean, apah, waters, pravishanti, enter. So as we know, the rivers constantly enter into the ocean, whether it's the Ganga, whether it's the, Brahmaputra in India, whether it's the Mississippi River. All of these rivers, Nile River in Egypt, they are constantly putting water into the ocean. Not only that, but even rain is falling. But the ocean does not cross its limits. It's not that the ocean gets over flooded because the rivers, or ocean doesn't say, stop, I have enough. Waters keep coming, but the ocean remains unchanged. Ocean does not cross its boundaries. It's not that suddenly the Pacific Ocean will start coming into LA and start coming into San Francisco and flood California. No, ocean keeps its limit. So, yadva, just as the ocean does not cross its limit, no matter how many rivers enter, how much water enters, similarly, tatvat kama, desires, yam pravishanti sarve. Yam means to that man of wisdom. In that man of wisdom, kamaha, all the desires, pravishanti sarve, constantly keep coming. As I said last time, I think they say there's a million impulses coming every day. I don't know how people come up with these numbers, but they say several million impulses, what we see here. Like we look around, how many things you are seeing right now, this chair, the people, and constantly, sounds and sights and smells and taste is coming. So for this person of wisdom also, kama yam pravishanti sarve. Same way that person also is exposed to all these impulses coming, sense impulses, desires. But sa shanti mapnoti, such a person, sa shanti mapnoti, he remains peaceful. Na kama kami, not a desirer of desires. That's why Bhagavan puts both. How does the man of wisdom act and how do the rest of us? So, man of wisdom is shantim, peaceful, and nakama kami. The desirer of desires can never have peace. So this verse, we'll need to spend some time talking about it. So the difference is, one is an ocean and one is a puddle. There's a small puddle of water. Now, what is the difference between an ocean and a puddle of water? See, ocean is huge. Puddle of water is small. Now, what happens to the puddle of water? Suppose there is sunshine for 2-3 days. It finishes, evaporates. Suppose a little stream runs, some rain falls, it overflows, it becomes. So small amount of water can make it overflow, and lack of water can make it evaporate. But the ocean, the sun is constantly shining, taking water away, making rain. Rivers are constantly coming. Does the ocean get bigger or smaller? Ocean remains the same. That's number one. So the ocean does not cross its limit, no matter how much comes and or how much goes. Ocean remains the same. So we are like that little puddle of water. Slightest joy comes, we overflow. Ah, wow, things are going great. I am so good. I did so good. Look at how successful I am. And we go around bragging and ah, ha, ha, ha. And then next day some little sorrow comes. Oh, God, why do I have? And then we start crying. And then we go to a psychiatrist and get some pills, or we, you know, smallest thing gets so, and you say, such a small thing, why you get so disturbed? Tea, the sugar is less. Or some small thing didn't go right in my, and we get so upset. My paper, somebody disturbed. I mean, small things, you know, car, somebody chained my seat, or somebody cuts us off, or somebody gives us a horn. I mean, small things in the office, at home, little things, we get so upset. You know, where is my shirt? Who put my... I mean, tiny little things. What they say is, do not sweat the small stuff. You know, it's not that important. The other day, somebody was telling me, you know, she was saying, oh, you know, this person talks so much and that person talks so much about me. I told her, I said, look, there are bigger things to worry about than what somebody is saying about me. We have so many bigger problems in life. You know, I mean, how, livelihood and this. Little, who is talking what? How does it matter? How we get so affected. What did she say about me? What did he say? Constantly. That is called a puddle, where the smallest thing disturbs you and the smallest thing. So be like the ocean. Let all people do whatever. That's what the man of wisdom is. Let people talk. I don't care what he has to do. The person does without getting disturbed. Second difference between a man, the ocean and the puddle is, puddle is very superficial. Ocean is deep, right? Ocean is hundreds of miles deep. So similarly, a man of wisdom is very deep inside. His understanding is very deep. Our understanding is very superficial. Superficially, we understand the scriptures. Gita, maine padh liya, and I have read it one time. Such people live Gita. See, that is the difference between a man of wisdom and us. They actually live the life because they have deeply understood the meaning of the scriptures. So when we read this, one should not read it only superficially, but what actually did Bhagavan mean by that? We should go deep into it and actually live it. That's why the ocean is called Ratnakar. There's another name for ocean. Ratnakar means that which creates jewels. Ratnakar. Karta means that which makes jewels. So if you dive deep in the ocean, they say you get very precious pearls. In fact, Raman Maharishi ji, in his book Sadarshanam, he talks about Mone Nam Majanam. So in silence, when you dive deep, just as a diver, of course, in those days, they didn't have all this scuba diving equipment, but the diver still had to go get pearls. So they had to hold their breath and be silent. You can't be talking when you're underwater. So their mouth would be closed, their breath would be controlled, and they would dive deep, and actually they could stay several minutes. That's how much control they had, those divers. And they would go and search for pearls and bring them up. So similarly, when we meditate, that's why they say in meditation, your breath should be controlled. You should breathe slowly and you should be silent. And in that silence, when your breath is controlled, you dive deep within and you will find great pearls of wisdom. Because ultimately all knowledge is from within. The books only remind you of what you already are. So whatever we study, is we are just remembering what I already know. Because all of us are that divinity. All of us have God within us. All the scriptures do is remind you that you are not this limited being. You are not a man or woman. You are Brahman. You are that infinite reality playing this part of Govindji or Satish or Sudha or whatever name, whatever form, whatever role I am playing. But actually, we are all that infinite reality. So the scriptures are only reminding us. So that's why the well is the ocean is called Ratnakar, because this man of wisdom, when you approach such a person, approach them with humility, and when you connect your mind with that man of wisdom, you get great pearls, because you can also go deep. That's what happened to Raman Maharishi. When Gurudev met him, or when Tapovan Maharaj met him, they were able to connect with his wisdom, with his bliss that he enjoyed, and they could experience that. So that's why when we listen to, say, when Swami Ishwarananji comes or other acharyas come, one should try to connect your mind so that we can also tap into that. Actually, these last 5 days were unbelievable. Those who attended, I'm sure, can say that the depth of teaching of Swamiji was so profound. Even a part of that, if you can get, it was very, very inspiring. We do have CDs available in case somebody would like to hear them again. So there's a very beautiful story about a well, of how it describes us, how we are. It's a very wonderful story. I heard it. So they said there was this man walking, and it was a little bit dark. It was not nighttime, but little evening time, and he slipped, and there was a well, and he didn't see that, and his foot slipped, and he was falling in the well. The well was deep. Luckily, it was dry, but there was a branch hanging, so he held on to that thick branch, and he's hanging, and he looks down there, and at the bottom of the well is a cobra snake, poisonous snake. So he said, oh gosh, if I fall, that snake is going to bite me. So he's all afraid. And then what happens? He looks up and he sees that there is a rat who is biting on that branch he's holding on to. So now the rat is biting, and slowly, slowly the branch is getting thinner and thinner, and he's going to fall any minute because the rat is not stopping. He says, gosh, if the rat bites through the branch, I'm done for. And down is a poisonous snake. And as he's worrying what to do, suddenly he sees a beehive from that same tree, the branch. And on the beehive, there is a honey dripping. So he puts his tongue out. Ah, at least I'm enjoying the honey. And he puts it and sucks on the honey, and he's so happy. That's exactly what we are. See, we are hanging from this branch called life, right? And the rat is biting it. We don't know when our turn will come, right? When is it my turn to leave this earth? Slowly, we celebrate every birthday, happy birthday to you. But actually, not to sound moribund, but we are getting closer to the end. And so this rat called time is cutting into our branch that we are holding on to. And below, we don't know what is going to happen to us. After birth, after death, what is going to happen to me? Will the snake bite me, or what? We don't know. And time is passing. The rat is cutting into our life. And all we are looking for is a little bit of honey. Oh, let me get some little joy, something to eat, something to enjoy. Say, you have a limited amount of time. Spend that time thinking about God or getting this knowledge. Why are you chasing after? Said, like that person, at that moment, he should be thinking about God instead of chasing after that honey. So similarly, you and I, our life is like that man in the well. We don't know when our number will be called. When you're sitting in a line for DMV, your number is 25 or 20. So same way, we are in this line to go up. And when our number will be called, we don't know. So whatever time you have, study the scriptures and remember God and stop chasing after these little. That's what Bhagavan says, na kama kami, the desirer of desires will never get anywhere. You have to, if you want to desire, desire God. And be a man of depth, be a man of wisdom. Then Gurudev, in his book, Manual of Self-Unfoldment, and also in this, in his commentary, gives a very beautiful mathematical equation, what he calls as happiness quotient. I'm spending a little more time on this verse because it's very important. We may not do three today. If we do two, it's good enough. We'll do the last one next week. So he talks about happiness quotient. So this is, what is happiness quotient? Number of desires fulfilled upon number of desires entertained. So what is the nominator? The above is number of desires fulfilled and below is number of desires entertained, and that's the quotient, that's the, what's the, I forget the exact word, but the fraction. Fraction. So like 3 upon 4, that is the correct word. He also calls it quotient. So what we are trying to do, and what all our advertising and Madison Avenue and industries, fulfill more desires, create more desires, fulfill, fulfill. I want more, I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. And the number of desires fulfilled never ends. It goes on. That's what Mahatma Gandhi said. He said there is enough for in this world for everybody's need, but there is not enough for one man's greed. Even one man's greed cannot be satisfied. No matter, you may give him all the wealth of this world, if he's greedy, he will not be satisfied. So what we try to do is we try to fulfill desires more and more. I must get this. This I want, let me go get it. That I want, let me go get it. This I want. But the number of desires entertained keeps increasing, right? I got this car, now I want this model. I have this dress, now I want this one. I have this jewelry, now I want this. I have 1 million, now I want 2 million. I have two, I want three. So the desires entertained does not reduce. We keep on increasing. So I'd like to give an example. Say, I have 100 desires entertained, and out of them 50 get fulfilled. 50 desires is pretty good, right? 50 out of 100. But then the person will say, 50 are fulfilled. How about the other 50? I didn't get them. So he's all the time looking at that. But suppose there's a person who only has 10 desires entertained, and out of them 9 get fulfilled. Which is easier to fulfill, 9 or 50? 9, right? 9 is easier. So if I have 10, but out of them 9 got fulfilled, who will be happier? The one with the 9, right? The one with the 10 desires. So Gurudev says, reduce your desires, because the world can never fulfill all your desires. There will be always something which will be left. But if my desires are, that's why we find all these Mahatmas, they live in utter simplicity. Pooja Guruji, Swami Tejomayanandaji, who was head of the mission from 93 to 2017, 24 years. If you look at him, he does not even have a house. He does not have a car. He owns nothing. He has a cell phone, which is given by the mission. He has a small laptop. He has 3 pairs of clothes and a small suitcase. He has no property to his name. He has nothing. Literally nothing. In fact, Swami Ishwarananda Ji, one of his points he brought up is that how are we going to take care of these Mahatmas when they retire, when they get old? We need to develop Vridhashrams, not Vridhashrams, but Chinmaya centers where these people can be taken care of, because they have nothing. They have zero desires. All their whole goal is to serve. Swami Ishwarananda Ji, that's why I feel blessed to belong to the Chinmaya mission, because there is absolutely zero corruption. There is no selfishness. We have gone quite deep. We have met all these people. We have been involved in the financial aspects and all. Every penny that is raised goes towards service, goes towards goodness. Nobody is getting rich. And that is So that's what they're saying. Reduce your desires, only then you'll be happy. If you say, I want, then if in spirituality also you are making money and getting rich, then what is the difference between you and somebody who is making shoes? The idea of getting involved is that I should be doing service. I should uplift myself and serve the world. So they say reduce your desires, then automatically your disturbance will be left less. Out of 10, I fulfill 9, or out of 100, I fulfill 50. So they say reduce your desires, and then only you will be at peace. As long as you are a kama kami, desirer of desires, na shanti mapnoti, Bhagwan says, you will never have peace. If you want to have peace, be content. Be reduced. And at the end of the day, thank you, Bhagwan, for what you have given me. Instead of, I had all those things I wanted and I'm grateful. Gratitude is a very, very powerful force. Love and gratitude. These two, if you have towards God, in fact, there is a gentleman who used to come to meditation class, George Johnson, and he actually moved to the coast. I probably have told you his story, but he came to our house one time. We had a teacher who was speaking on the chakras and all that, on Reiki. And so this George Johnson is a good friend of mine. So he came there with his wife and he learned from that teacher about gratitude, you know, to be grateful. And so this person, he still meditates very regularly every morning, but he says the first 5 minutes I spend in being grateful. Thank you, God. And he's a multimillionaire. He has sold his business to his son. He has so much property. He's living in a very nice house on the coast. We visited him. And he says 5 or 7 minutes I spend in gratitude. And he says it is very hard to be grateful. He says, okay, I can be grateful for my money, my health. He's older now, and my wife, my children. After that, what? Then he's grateful for the weather, and then he's grateful for his friends. And so he says that I spend the first 5 or 7 minutes of my meditation in an attitude of gratitude. And he says that gets my mind so peaceful. Then he says meditation is very easy for me because my mind becomes quiet. So that's what they say. Have gratitude and reduce your desires. That will calm your mind. There's so much about this shloka. Maybe I may not even do anything else, which is okay. You know, this shloka is so beautiful. Another example in a commentary I heard about soccer. So this Swami Bodhatmanandaji, whose commentary I listened to, was telling us that he says that one time he was in some Orlando, there was a Chinmaya camp, and which was a family camp. Adults and children all had come. In fact, there's going to be a family camp in San Diego in the first week of August, if somebody would like to go, where they have programs for children and for adults. You know, they have very good activity. So he said in this camp in Orlando, there were two groups. There were children 5 to 9, and then there were children 10 and above. So between the morning session and the morning and then the forenoon session, there used to be about a half an hour or 40-minute gap so people could have tea or relax. So he says in that break, these 5 to 9-year-old kids would be playing soccer. So they had a soccer ball, so they would run around. Now the 8 and 9-year-olds knew the rules of soccer, okay, that there is a goal here and there is a goal there, and then you're 5, 6 and 7, what do they know? So they would try to tell them, oh, no, they would just, with the ball, you know how little kids, if you have seen the little kids playing soccer in AYSO, ball goes, they all go there, and then the ball comes, they all, so they have no idea where to kick the ball. Sometimes they kick in their own goal. And the 8 and 9-year-olds were telling them, no, this is not the way to play. And they didn't know the rules of the game. They just kick the ball wherever it goes. It goes outside, they will keep kicking. They say, no, it's outside the line. They don't care. So after a while, he said, the 8 and 9-year-olds got tired. They said, we can't play with these little kids. So they just stood on one side. And they said, let's just watch the game. And this 5-6-year-old will kick. Somebody will fall. He will cry, then get up and he'll little scrape in the knee again. He'll start chasing the ball. So so to come back to our example, we are like that 5, 6, or 7-year-old kids who are running around in this world without knowing the rules, We don't know the rules of the game. We don't know how to play. Then we fall and we get hurt and then we cry and then we get up and then we start chasing the... But we don't know what is our goal. We don't know that the ball is supposed to go in this direction and not supposed to go in this direction. We keep chasing after life. But the man of wisdom is the one who knows the rules, and he says, these people, you know, they're not going to listen. They are just going to do what they want. Let them. So after a while, he'll say, I'm not playing the game. You know, the man of wisdom says, I'll stand on one side and watch all these people running around. And that's what happens to us, because these men of wisdom, they try to talk to us till they are blue in the face. Gurudev spent his whole life traveling and talking, and how many people did, you know, how much he tried from 1947-48 till 93. And all these Mahatmas repeatedly have come again and again. That's why Bhagavan says, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. Whenever the need comes, tadatmanam srijamyaham, I appear. And so Lord has appeared, but have we changed? No, we find there is still so much violence, and there is still so much conflict, and there is still so much stress. And interestingly, the man of wisdom, because he doesn't fit in our box, you know, of how he should be, we say eliminate him. That's what we do with all these. Either we ignore them or we finish them off. That's what we did with Jesus and how we treated Mirabai and Sant Gyaneshwar. Because these people don't fit in our square. You know, this is how a person should be. He's outside. Eliminate him. Or we mistreat him or we ignore him. So that is what they're saying, that a wise person will stand and watch the game. He will tell us, this is how you should play. If we listen, fine. If we don't, then we will just fall and get hurt. So they say karmas will bind us if we do it out of ego, that about I am the doer. But a wise person says, I am not the doer. I am Brahman. I am the Atman. And in my presence, this body, mind and intellect are functioning. So that's what they say. Be a man of wisdom. Do not let desires bind you. Another beautiful example I read is like, say, suppose you own the Bank of America, or, you know, the biggest, I don't know which is the biggest bank in the world, Citibank or bank. Suppose you own that. You are the owner and you are the exclusive owner. Now you go to the Federal Credit Union or West America Bank, and you ask them, can you give me a loan of $500 or $1,000? They will laugh at you. They say, you own the entire Bank of America and you are asking us for $1,000 loan and filling out an application? So he says, we are also full. You know, remember he says, apuryamanam. We are all full. We all have Bhagwan in us. We all have that consciousness. We all have Bank of America with us, but we still go around begging for happiness from people. Smile at me so I'll be happy, or talk to me, I don't want to talk to you. Oh, please talk to me, don't want to talk to me, it's okay, I'm fine. You talk to me, I'm fine. But we get so affected because we beg for happiness from others. We ask for small, small things. He says, you have Bhagwan in you. How can anybody disturb you? Once you have encountered that Lord within, then nobody can disturb you. So he says, be full. We are all complete. We are all full. And the other thing is, achala pratishtham. It is steady. And how can a person be steady? Only when his mind is under his control. If your mind is not under your control, then you will be disturbed and you will be saddened and you will be tortured. So they say, keep your mind under your control. Do not let people disturb it. And how can I do that? Through meditation. That's why all the scriptures, all of them emphasize meditation. Because when you meditate regularly every morning, and if you learn meditation and you practice it, slowly you will find that your mind that used to be disturbed won't be disturbed anymore. Things that used to bother you won't bother you anymore. Somebody asked one of the acharyas, Swami Chidananda, he says, how do I know I'm progressing spiritually? So his answer was, if things that used to bother you don't bother you anymore, then and only then you are progressing spiritually. So regular meditation brings us in contact with the Lord, and then we recognize our depth, our wisdom. But why don't we progress? Again, repeated listening, there's no change in us. Why? Because we are not available. See, are you available for this knowledge? And that is the number one criteria. Make yourself available when you listen to the teacher, when you listen to the guru. Is my mind open? And if I've always been doing these things, I don't think I will change, then you won't change. So make yourself available to the wisdom, make yourself available to the knowledge. Let the guru, so I think I may have talked about it, you know, suppose you have a slate which is empty, which is white, then your guru can write on it. But suppose your slate has lot of writing on it, and the whole slate is full, then if the guru comes, he has no place to write. So similarly, our mind is so full of agitations, disturbances, sorrows, that the guru talks, but there is no place. So make your mind empty, reduce your desires, reduce your agitations, and make yourself available. So listen with attention. So that is the difference between hearing and listening. I hear what the guru is saying, but unless I am ready to accept that, unless I make myself available, this knowledge will not help us. So that is the essence of this verse, the difference between the man of wisdom, who is like an ocean, who is very deep, whose knowledge is profound, who has a lot of ocean of treasures of wealth within, just as and does not get easily disturbed, even though all the rivers are entering, the waters are entering. So the man of wisdom, all the desires enter in him constantly, but does not cross his limits, does not cross its boundaries, remains full, remains complete, remains steady. So be like the man of wisdom, like the ocean. Do not be like a little puddle who gets easily disturbed. I can stop here, maybe a couple of minutes if we have comments, and then we can continue more verses.
The moment I step out, everything is safe. The town is gone.
Right.
So the task of reducing the desires.
Yes. Actually, if you have not read that book, Manual of Self-Unfoldment, it's in the office. Very practical, very simple, but very profound. And the first article in that is this, how to make. It's a very beautiful text, Manual of Self-Unfoldment. You can buy that in the office. But there Gurudev explains exactly how to, the difference between desires fulfilled and desires entertained. But no, you're so right. And more society is now bombarding us. You know, the TV and the media and the people and comparing, you know, trying to keep up with the Jones and all those, keep up with the neighbors. Especially in the Indian community, it has become such a competitive race. Mm-hmm. Who has the bigger diamond, who has the bigger house, who has the bigger car, who has the, you know, latest this and latest that, and find that people, you know, again, I shouldn't compare, but if you go in the Bay Area, people are building bigger and bigger houses on higher and higher on the hill. And it's so competitive, and it's all, so that's what it is. You're just increasing your desires. So much competition is there. It's, I think stop competing with others. I'm happy as I am. I'm fine. And that's very important. I think one is like what this George Johnson does. Then I get up in the morning and spend 5 minutes just recounting what things I'm grateful for. You know, so that is one way. So you start your day good, or before your meditation. Or otherwise, just constantly remind yourself, oh God, you know, I'm so grateful for. Like now this class, you know, I'm so grateful that we are all here and talking about this highest knowledge, this mission that Gurudev has started, and where our children are studying, you know. So constantly, even the air we breathe, you know, people say Bakersfield has dirty air. You want to see dirty air, go to Delhi or go to Mexico. This is nothing. This is so clean. I go to Delhi in 1 week, I start coughing. After 1 week, I have to leave. I can't live in more than 7 days. So be grateful for the air. You know, be grateful for the clean water and for the everything. Our life, our ability, my ability to think and my emotions and my healthy body and my ability to see and ability to earn. And in this country, we are blessed with so much, you know, more than people who are in Africa or other parts of the world, they are suffering. So constantly just be thankful to God and remind yourself all the things that we do. And anytime you have anything going well, sit in your car, be thankful I have a car, I don't have to walk to work. You know, you can constantly remind yourself.
Desires
keep increasing, the ability to fulfill them goes down. So then you get more frustrated. I want to do this, I want to eat, but I can't eat. And I want to enjoy this. Actually, that's why it actually increases. It should, right? Because the ability to fulfill goes down, right? I can't do the things at 20. What I should do at 20, I cannot do at 70, but the desire still remains. Bhagavan says, Vishaya vinivartante nirahārasya dehina rasavarjam. The taste still remains. The ability to fulfill goes away. So how? And how do I dissolve the rasavarjam? Rasopi asya param drishtva nivartate. How do I reduce my desires? By desiring God and by reaching God. That is the only way to reduce the number of desires entertained. Otherwise, you will be just chasing them. See, all we do is keep increasing the denominator and then try to, with the increasing the numerator, try to satisfy desire. I fulfill more, get more. And the whole world, they say, you know, the economy runs on that. So why should I participate in that? Let the world economy run on people buying and all. Why I have to get caught in that circle? Okay, the world economy is not going to stop because I stop buying. In fact, there's one lady who comes to our meditation class and she has said that so many times. She says, she's a nurse. She says that, and I think she's single or I'm not sure, but she's... So she says that every week she used to go to Valley Plaza, every week, and just walk through the store, and if she finds something, she'll buy it. If not, she'll just walk. And she said since she has started meditating and coming, she actually one of the most regular students. She has been coming for more than 10 years. She said, I haven't gone to Valley Plaza in 6 months. So I don't have the desire to go. She says, because I found the joy within, which she was looking in buying, you know, a dress or anything, small thing. So that's what I think. So you have to reduce your desires entertained. You cannot fulfill all the desires. That's why the book, that is a very good book, Manual of Self-Unfoldment.
That's how we all are. We have the lottery, but we just lose it by having more desires and not recognizing that lottery ticket.
Right. Yeah, we all have, that's what Swami Vivekananda said, immortality is your birthright. We all have the right to be immortal, but we give it up. Yes. And this human body itself is a lottery. You know, this BMI is a lottery because after 8.4 million births, 84 lakh yoni ke baad, you have got this human body. Don't waste it. That's what they keep telling us. You may not get it again. Next life, you may be born as a mosquito or a monkey or a buffalo. We don't know. So use this human life, A, to make myself evolved, and second, to serve the world. These should be the only two most important goals of life. I have to serve and I have to evolve. Nothing else is important. Yes, we have to take care of our family and children and educate them and all. But that's not my prime purpose why I came on this planet.
Thank